to James chapter 5. I'm sorry, James chapter 3. James chapter 3. I've always had an affinity for the book of James, an extremely practical book. And even more so in my life as I've gotten older, the book of James is written. I believe the James who is the author of this book is the brother of Jesus. The James who we meet in various places in the New Testament, starting out with his other brothers as an unbeliever, but becoming convinced based on the resurrection of Jesus, becoming a convert, and eventually becoming not just a member of the Church of Jerusalem, but an elder of the church in Jerusalem. We meet him in that capacity in Acts chapter 15. And so this letter is written by an elder of a local church, and I suspect that he's writing it very personally. He's writing it to the members of the local church, over which he assumes with others some oversight. And one of the things that he tells them in James chapter 3 is this. I'm not going to start reading in verse 13, but he's talking about wisdom beginning in verse 13. And he talks a little bit about earthly wisdom, which is characterized by jealousy and ambition. But he says in verse 17, "But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere." And then in verse 18, "And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." My understanding is that what James is saying here is, as an elder in a local church, to those members of that local church, we have two priorities. And our first priority is purity of wisdom. The wisdom that is from above is first pure. We are going to be doctrinally sound. We are going to be doctrinally pure. And we've talked about that before, and I would suggest to you again tonight that that must be the number one priority of any local church, is that we are going to know the truth, and we are going to teach the truth, and we are going to live the truth in our lives. And we're going to hold each other accountable as members of a local church to living the truth. But then he says, after we've settled that, the wisdom that is from above is first pure, right behind it, he says, comes peace. The wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable. And he expands on that. Peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. In other words, I think what he's saying in verse 18 is this: it is very difficult to practice righteousness if we don't have peace in the local church. And so peace must also be a very high priority. But I would suggest to you that keeping peace, being at peace in a local church, that is a very fragile thing. There are so many things that can disrupt the peace of a local congregation. So many tools that Satan has at his disposal that can shatter the peace of a local congregation. And I've seen it down through the years. I've seen it put in practice many times, that Satan doesn't have the ability to attack a local church, perhaps, on a doctrinal level, because the congregation has determined we are going to maintain and uphold the truth. And so he operates on the next level. If I can't get them to believe and practice and teach false doctrine, I can destroy them another way. I can ruin their influence. I can disrupt their efforts to practice righteousness. I can destroy the peace of the local congregation. And what I want to suggest to you tonight is, and this is just one aspect of a big, broad topic about the importance of there being peace in the local congregation. But what I want to suggest to you is that, and I've seen it happen, that the peace of a local congregation can very often be destroyed with the repeating of three words. And these three words, again, this is not a theoretical exercise. I've experienced these three words personally. And I've been a part of local churches where the peace was disrupted, and maybe even the peace destroyed in the local congregation. And it all started with these three words. And the three words are this: people are saying. People are saying. That's an interesting expression. And it can be used in lots of different contexts, I suppose. But people are saying, the idea being that there is some criticism that's being offered. And here's how we're going to pass the criticism along. We're going to pass the criticism along by saying to someone or some group of people, people are saying. And it can manifest itself in lots of different ways. I've been hearing some talk around the congregation that, and as we look at each one of these just very quickly, have you ever noticed that very seldom, if ever, does someone identify? It's not, Bob McPherson said, well, so I've been hearing some talk around the congregation, and in my personal experience, very often when you press, well, who's doing the talking? Oh, I can't say. I can't say. I'm not at liberty to say. People are saying that your sermons are too long. People are saying some folks have a problem with your family, with your wife. Some people have problems with your husband. Some people have problems with how you're raising your children. Some people say you're not friendly enough. You don't do enough visiting. You just kind of keep to yourself. People are talking about that. Or people are really upset. Some people are really upset with you over what you said about, and then you can fill in the blank. You can fill in the blank. What I want to suggest to you tonight is that this is an effort on the part of Satan to attack us on the peace level in the local congregation. Who are these people? They were saying, I was with a group of people and they said, who are these people? And what is the motive? What would be a motive for somebody offering a criticism using these three words? Let me suggest to you that I think there are two motives. Why would somebody come to a preacher, come to a member, come to the elders? As a matter of fact, I think we could take this way beyond just the local church. We could talk about this in regard to our family relationships. We could talk about this kind of criticism. People are saying criticism on the job, among friends, among neighbors. But why would people do that? I think there are two reasons. One reason might be this, that there really is criticizing and complaining going on. But the people who are doing the criticizing and complaining are not willing to step up and address the problem directly and lovingly. But I think there's another reason why sometimes people will come to some other Christian, come to the elders, come to the preacher and say something like the things that you see on the screen. And that is because maybe people are the person who's saying this. Maybe the person who's saying it is just a coward and doesn't really want to say face to face to the preacher, I think your sermons are too long. Maybe the person who's saying this, maybe it's really not widespread criticism at all. Maybe it's the person who's afraid to be direct and loving and confront the criticism. I don't like the way you're dealing with your children. I don't like the way you're raising your children. But I don't want that burden on me. I don't want people to think badly of me. So I will suggest that there are people who are saying this, and maybe there aren't other people saying that at all. And that, brethren, is just, it not only is it cowardly, it is dishonest. It is dishonest. This kind of a criticism, and I will say this again in a few minutes, but let me say it now. This is not a lesson suggesting that there is not a place for criticism. There absolutely is. As a matter of fact, let me just go ahead and say it now. Let me go ahead and make this point now. The Bible makes it very clear that sometimes criticism is needed. The Apostle Paul felt the need to criticize Peter. And you remember how he did it, right? He went to Peter and said, "Listen, old buddy, you know, some people are talking. Some people don't like the way you handled that eating with the Gentiles thing. Just thought I'd tell you. Just trying to help." What did Paul do? "I went to him," Paul said, and face to face. I don't think this is really what Paul is saying, but I've heard people in Bible classes say something like this: "Well, Paul got in his face." I don't think that's quite the point, but the point is this: Paul said, "I had a problem with what Peter did. I went to Peter. I talked to Peter." There is a place for criticism. And as a matter of fact, we ought to be willing to receive criticism that is offered in concern, that is offered in love, that is genuine. We should be willing to receive that kind of criticism. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a particular type of criticism, and that is the "people are saying" criticism. And I want to suggest to you very quickly four reasons why a Christian should never use a "people are saying" criticism. And I'm gonna emphasize that. Let me say that again. I really wrestled with, and I rewrote this on the screen and in my notes. I rewrote this several times, thinking about how I wanted to say this. I don't mean you should be very careful how you use a "people are saying" criticism. And I don't mean that there are times when it would be right to go to someone and say, "Well, you know, anonymous people are saying." What I'm saying tonight is it is never right under any circumstances for a Christian to level this kind of a criticism to someone in your family, to someone with whom you work, to a neighbor, to the elders, to a preacher, to brothers and sisters in Christ. It is never right. And what it does is it gives the devil an inroad into destroying the peace and the harmony of the local church. Four reasons why you should never use a "people are saying" criticism. And the first one, and really this should settle the question, it's just unbiblical. It's just unbiblical. The Bible offers very clear and plentiful advice with how to deal with differences that arise among brethren. What happens, for example, if we have personal conflicts? It's interesting to me that in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew's account especially of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, Jesus touches on this subject on several occasions. The seventh of the Beatitudes: "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God." Matthew chapter 5 and verse 9. And then in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 24, he comes back to this subject. He's talking about anger. What happens if I get angry? What happens if I get angry with a brother? How do I deal with that? And he says in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 24, first, before you do anything else, before you say anything else, first he says, be reconciled to your brother. Very clearly, Jesus is making the point early in the Sermon on the Mount that if there are personal conflicts between Christians, the way we initially at least deal with those personal conflicts is we deal with them one-on-one. We deal with them directly. And that's exactly what we read in Matthew chapter 18, is it not? The passage that Blake read with us just a few minutes ago. Matthew chapter 18, you got something against your brother. And by the way, in Matthew 18, Jesus doesn't say what it is. He doesn't say what it is, but you have this conflict with your brother. If your brother sins against you, whatever that sin is, whatever that conflict is, go and tell him his fault. Listen to this: between you and him alone. Period. Not go and tell it to somebody else. Not get a group of people together that you think might be sympathetic to what your criticism is and tell it to them. Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. It's just that simple. I mean, it really is. How do we resolve conflicts? Conflicts are going to come up. Situations and circumstances are going to come up. The solution is not to go to that person and say, people are saying. In Romans chapters 14 and about the first seven verses of Romans 15, and Paul comes back to the same kind of thing in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and 1 Corinthians chapter 10 as well. What if we have just disagreements? What if we have differences of opinion? In Romans chapter 14 and verse 13, Paul says, therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer. The solution is not talking behind somebody's back and hoping that it gets back to them through a third party. The answer is not go ahead and share the criticism with them, but don't take any personal responsibility for it. Blame it on somebody else. People are saying, people are talking. They said, I was with a group of people, and they said. The solution is deal with it personally. Let's not pass judgment on one another. In Matthew chapter 22 and verse 39, love your neighbor as yourself. In the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7, the golden rule, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. Over and over and over again, the Bible makes it clear that there is a scriptural way, there is a biblical way, there is a right way to resolve differences. If you have an issue with someone or some group of people, you go and talk to them. You don't talk to anybody else. It is never right to use a people are saying criticism. This next point really is a little outside the realm of biblical, but it is significant and important, I think, to understand that when I use a people are saying criticism, I am trying to be controlling and manipulative. I have an agenda. I want something. I want something changed. I want something done. But I don't have enough courage to stand up and say, this is me. This is what I want. I attach my name to this. And so we hide behind people. We hide behind they. We hide behind them. And we offer a people are saying criticism. Let me ask you a question. From the perspective of a preacher, from the perspective of an elder in a local church, somebody comes to me or somebody comes to the elders of the local church and they say, I just thought you ought to know that people are saying blank. The question is this, what do they expect us to do about it? What do they expect us to do about it? What do they expect? Somebody comes to me and says, now people are saying this about you, Gary. What do they expect me to do about it? Are they telling the truth? I don't know. Are there really people out there? Is it that big a problem? Are they just covering up in cowardice? I'm sorry if the language maybe sounds strong. Well, I'm really not sorry. I mean for it to sound strong because it is cowardice. The problem is them, but they don't want to say that. They don't want to own up to it. They don't want to admit it. What are we supposed to do when a criticism like that is offered? And I will tell you this, and I suspect this is true of every gospel preacher. If it hasn't happened to Brother McPherson yet, bless your heart, it will. You're going to lose some sleep over something like this because somebody's going to come to you and somebody's going to say, well, you know, Gary, people are saying, Bob, people are saying, and you're going to lay awake at night wondering, is that true? How widespread is it? What do I do about it? I don't know who to talk to about it. I don't know who to discuss it with. There's no opportunity to defend myself. There's no opportunity to explain myself. Because the criticism has been offered anonymously. And so it causes stress. And it causes pain. It is controlling and manipulative. If it is true, and I think it is, that probably most of the time, but little subjective on my part, I know, but I think it's true that if it is true that probably most of the time when somebody comes to a preacher or elders or just members, somebody comes and says, people are saying, really what they're saying is that this is what I think. This is what I think. Still doesn't offer us any opportunity to solve the problem. It is controlling. They're trying to get something changed. They have an agenda. They're trying to get something accomplished. Do you remember in 1 Corinthians, in the very beginning of 1 Corinthians, when Paul said to these brethren in Corinth, I have heard some things about you. Do you remember what he does? Do you remember what he does? He said, I heard this from the house of Chloe. Don't put your brethren in a position that causes them pain. In not being able to know how to fix something, not even knowing if there really is a problem at all. Number three, it's just flat discouraging. It's discouraging. I don't buy, and I haven't for a long time. Very often when somebody comes and says, Gary, people are saying, now I'm just telling you this out of love. I don't buy that. I mean, you can say it, but I don't believe it. Because if you come to me and say, people are saying, I'm going to stop you before you say it, and I'm going to say, name the people. And almost always the response will be, no. I can't, I won't name the people. And I've got to tell you, brethren, that is discouraging. How discouraged would you be if somebody came to you and said, I'm telling you this because, you know, I'm concerned. I'm telling you this because I love you, but there are people at Eastside are talking. They don't like the way you're raising your kids. Are you going to be encouraged by that? Or let me tell you something. People are talking. They don't like the way you're treating your wife. They don't like what you're saying about your husband. They'd be encouraged. You think that's going to make somebody feel good about themselves? Do you think that offers somebody the opportunity to grow, to make real progress in their lives? It is discouraging, and that's exactly what Satan wants. I can't get them to compromise on doctrine. They have committed themselves to the wisdom that is from above is first pure. And so I will attack them on the next level. I'm going to start trying to destroy the peace of the local congregation. And the way I'll do that is I'll start planting doubts in their mind. I'll get them discouraged. And I will encourage people to pass along criticism in a people are saying motif. And it works. I've told you before that in 40 years of preaching, I have known of a number of local congregations who have divided and split. And I've also told you before that very seldom in my personal experience have those divisions ever been the result of doctrinal differences. The divisions more often than not are the result of personal issues and conflicts. And people are saying, it is amazing how often this little device, those little three words are right there behind it. It is discouraging. And I will say to you, number four, it facilitates gossip. It facilitates gossip. You're passing along information that you say you didn't originate, and you refuse to identify the source, you are guilty of gossip. And it is impressive to me how often the Bible, both the Old and the New Testament, deals with sins of the tongue. When we think about sins of the tongue, we very often think about lying, and certainly that would be near the top of the list, if not at the top of the list. We might think about filthy language or filthy speech, which would be right up there too. But the sin of the tongue that is the most often dealt with in both the Old and the New Testament is not lying, It is not filthy speech. It is slander and gossip. And both the Old and the New Testament deal with it. Just a couple of examples in Leviticus chapter 19. And by the way, we've talked about this a lot in the men's class recently on Friday mornings. The theme of the book of Leviticus, be holy, for I am holy. What is one manifestation of holiness? Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16. You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people. Slander and gossip, repeating things that are intended to be harmful or hurtful or discouraging or controlling or manipulative, is a manifestation of unholiness. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 18, just one of dozens of passages in the book of Proverbs that deal with this. The one who conceals hatred has lying lips. Whoever utters slander is a fool. You know, somebody might be sitting there thinking, it occurred to me this afternoon, somebody might be, I'll make this point, and somebody might be sitting there thinking, well, you know, maybe the people are saying is a positive thing. Maybe. Hey, Gary, just wanted you to know people are saying they don't think you preach long enough. Just wanted to let the elders know, you know, people are talking, people are saying, you guys are doing a great job. But that's not what we hear. Usually if somebody has a compliment, they don't mind owning up to it. That's me. It's only when they have a criticism that they want to hide behind people. People are saying. And when we pass along, even if it's true that that doesn't represent us, even if that's true, when we pass it along, we have participated in gossip. We are no longer holy. 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 20 in the New Testament. For I fear, Paul says, that perhaps when I come, I may find you not as I wish, and that you may find me not as you wish, that perhaps there may be quarreling, jealousy, anger, hostility, slander, and gossip, along with conceit and disorder. And so Paul gives us the other side of the coin in Ephesians 4, verse 29. Let no corrupt talk come out of your mouth, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hears. Let me tell you something. When somebody comes to you and says, people are saying, let me tell you what they're really saying. What they're really saying is people are gossiping about you. People are complaining about you. And I heard it. And they don't have the courage to come and confront you or talk to you face to face. May I make a suggestion? I think it's a biblically based suggestion, but may I make a suggestion? The next time somebody comes to you and says, people are saying, stop them. Stop them right there. And ask them this question. Have you talked to the person yourself? If somebody comes to you and says, people are saying, stop them right there and insist. Okay, you give me names. You tell me the names. And then I can go talk to those people. You give me the names. If they refuse to give you the names, the conversation ends. The conversation is over. And also, if you are using people are saying to disguise how you really feel, then understand and recognize that what you're doing is being dishonest. You're lying. It's not people who are saying that. That's what you think. And that's what you believe. You are being controlling and manipulative. You want change. You want something done. But you don't have the courage to just stand up and say, this is how I feel. This is how I think. You are discouraging people. and you are facilitating gossip. I'm really confident that if we would put into practice that idea of just, I'm not going to participate in discussions like that. I'm not going to listen to criticism where the source is not identified. And that's true in every situation. I want to know the names of the people who said it. Who told you that? And let me tell you this, I'm going to insist on that. And when you tell me their names, I'm going to talk to them and I'm going to tell them you told me. My guess is if all of us would adopt a policy like that, that this would be pretty well. Barney Fife, nipped in the bud. We just don't even let it come to this. What I'm suggesting to you is that it is not ever right for those of us who are Christians, who are trying to honor God and glorify God and praise God and serve God in everything that we do, including with our tongues. It is not ever right under any circumstances. Now, if you can show me a circumstance where, again, I will concede the compliment. If you can show, we're talking about criticism. If you can show me a situation where it is ever right to offer a criticism anonymously, I will stand up here next Sunday and make a public correction of that. I don't anticipate the need to do that, but I will. Let's stop saying, people are saying. If you have a complaint with someone, if you think someone has wronged you in some way, go talk to them. Resolve it. You have a difference of opinion with someone, talk to them. Resolve it. And if it is just a matter of opinion, stop and think, is this worth even discussing? Is this worth even talking about? Let's honor one another as brothers and sisters in Christ and encourage one another and exhort one another and build one another up. Let's remember, we've talked some, and I agree with this. I've heard some people say publicly that, said the East Side Church is kind of under attack. I think there's a very real sense in which that is true. Satan is targeting us and he's putting a lot on us. He's giving us a lot to deal with. He's confronting us with a lot of challenges. We can defeat those challenges. We can stand shoulder to shoulder and we can overcome those challenges. But this is very difficult to overcome. Let's be very careful. I will say again, there is a place for valid criticism. There's definitely a place for valid criticism. Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the how. Let's stop hiding behind people are saying. If you're here and you are subject to the invitation in any way tonight, and we can assist you in responding, becoming a Christian, coming back into a right relationship with God, the invitation song is sung to give you a few minutes to think about your spiritual condition and to make whatever change you need to be made. We'll be glad to help you in any way we can. Come down to one of these front seats while we stand and sing. We invite you to come.